The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the delightful Jonathan Strickland.
Hey, Ariel. I got a question for you. So, Ariel, for the purposes of this question, you have found yourself at the Magic Kingdom.
Yay.
Over in Disney World.
Yay.
You can pick one ride in the entire park, and there will be no line for you. And you can ride in your favorite spot on the ride. So if there's a specific area of whatever ride that you're like, oh, I love to be in the front or I love to be in the back or whatever, it's all yours. Which ride do you pick and why?
I'm going to say Space Mountain, because it's the thrill ride. It's like the thrill ride, you know?
It also tends to have like the longest line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I would sit in the front.
Nice.
Where I feel the most like I'm going to hit my head.
Yes.
Because I always feel like I'm going to hit my head because, you know, I'm 5'9", 5'10". If it were a past ride, it would be the Alien Encounters ride that they eventually turned into the Lilo and Stitch encounter.
Right.
Where you all sit in this circular room and then the lights go out and the alien attacks you and it breathes on your neck and it tickles you. And
the extraterrestrial ride.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, I hated it.
It didn't really fit Disney.
That's why I hated it.
But I loved it. when they turned into Stitch, it was better.
It was very immersive. Like, you know, they were using all the binaural audio stuff and the 4D kind of effects, you know, which was interesting. But it was so mean-spirited, which is what really bugged me. Like, the pre-show had a really mean-spirited moment with a teleporter mishap, for example. And it was just... Yeah. Something that I felt like, wow, this is not a great fit for this particular park.
It wasn't. So I understand why it went away, even for when they changed it to Lilo and Stitch. If it were a future ride, I would probably say the Tron coaster is going to beat out Space Mountain any day.
Yeah.
But I haven't ridden that because I haven't been to the park where it currently exists. Jonathan, what ride would you ride? No line.
Gosh, you'd think I would have prepared something.
You'd think, yeah.
So I tell you what my favorite two rides in the park happen to be Pirates of the Caribbean and the Haunted Mansion. Those are my two favorite rides. However, Haunted Mansion, even when there's a line, it goes pretty fast because it swallows up big groups of people all at once. Mm-hmm. Pirates of the Caribbean, that line can be really long sometimes.
Yeah.
I guess that's the one I would go with. I'm tempted to say Space Mountain as well, because that's a great ride and I haven't ridden it in ages because my wife does not like roller coasters, but I love roller coasters.
Me. I used to hate them. Now I love them.
See, now if we were both at the park, I would be okay with saying, all right, I'll use mine to go on Space Mountain. You can ride in front. I'll ride behind and let's do this. I would do it in that case. If I were by myself, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Fair enough.
Okay, well, now that we have answered that question, it's time for us to move on to what we like to call the rest of the episode.
It's such an original title.
I mean, we played with a bunch of different segments, but the rest of the episode won out because we were both tired.
Yes. Okay. So the next segment in the rest of this episode is going to be some geek news.
Yes.
Surprise, surprise. And the first piece of geek news is Godzilla versus Kong got its first trailer.
Yeah. And also, spoiler alert, this story and another one in our lineup are going to play into our mashup later on. So that's some foreshadowing. Yeah, I watched this trailer, which was entertaining. You know, it's got a lot. It's very King Kong heavy, which not very surprising for the United States audience.
No. And it features, so the story is that Godzilla has turned against humanity. If you didn't watch Godzilla and then Godzilla King of Monsters, which are the previous two movies on the Godzilla side of this franchise, Godzilla is kind of an anti-hero. He's kind of a good guy. he, she. I'm uncertain on that. It changes depending on the
on the incarnation, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this one, King Kong, who is also kind of a good guy, misunderstood. I mean, that's always been the case for King Kong, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's always been a misunderstood good ape, just giant.
Yes.
Ends up fighting Godzilla. And
yeah.
So I'm sad because I like both of them.
Right.
At first, well, I was so excited. And now that I'm like, one of them's going to have to lose, I'm just going to cry.
I'm sure it's going to be one of those where no one really loses and no one really wins. Like, it'll be something where Godzilla, you know, lurks off into the ocean and King Kong is slowly limping its way back to safety or something. Well, the trailer has a moment where, you know, Kong's in chains while Godzilla mm-hmm. is rising up to wreak havoc, and Kong is kind of losing his ape mind in the process. My favorite moment in the trailer is where Kong does the action hero leap away from an explosion shot.
Yes, yes. And the punch into Godzilla's mouth at the same time.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it was like that whole, it was that whole trope of, you know, you see the explosive coming down at a building, and so you make a run for it and you jump just as the explosion goes off and mm-hmm. it propels you through the air. And to see that with King Kong, I was like, all right, this is ridiculous.
If he had done that, you say that you think they'll both limp away. If they had done that in the original King Kong movie, he would have survived the Empire State Building.
Yeah, no,
I'm just saying.
Well, and to be fair, both King Kong and Godzilla, besides having a history where Godzilla becomes either a he or a she, they both also have a history where, one, their size changes depending upon the moment of the movie. Like, yes. there are sequences in both King Kong films and in Godzilla films where you can't tell how big these things are supposed to be because they do change from scene to scene. Mm-hmm. And two, their capacity to soak up damage changes from movie to movie too. So, but it was interesting. Like, it definitely is spectacle. It's the kind of movie that immediately made me think, yeah, this is coming to HBO Max, but it definitely feels like the kind of movie that would benefit the most in seeing it on the big screen.
I agree. I hope that once theaters open back up, that they re-release some of these more spectacular movies for people to watch in a larger scale. That being said, we are going to get it earlier than expected. Instead of coming out in May, we're going to get it in March.
Yep.
So yay.
So that's something to look forward to. Something else to look forward to is that we now know that all 5 seasons of the original Muppet Show are coming to Disney Plus.
Yes. And 2 of those seasons have never been released on home entertainment before.
Yeah. Seasons 4 and 5. Yeah. 1 through 3 were released on DVD. And mm-hmm. season 4 was planned to release on DVD. They had even had a show of the box art at a D23 event in the past. It just never happened. There are still some questions. There's a lot of speculation going on. The big one being, will this version have all the sequences that were shot for the Muppet Show? For 2 reasons. One is that in the UK, there was typically 1 extra segment per episode because they had not as many minutes of commercial to account for. So mm-hmm. since they had fewer commercials, they had an extra segment in the UK version of the Muppets, stuff that we here in the United States never got to see. And 2, in the past, one of the things that has held up some of those sequences is that the Muppets would do music numbers. And often it was, you know, very popular music of the time, that being the late 70s, early 80s. And that meant that music licensing rights were a complication. So the DVD releases left out some of those music numbers because of that. And there's a question about whether or not those will be restored for the Disney Plus version, or if we're going to get the same kind of chopped up episodes due to those music licensing issues.
Yeah. Another question is if we're going to get all of the Muppet movies on Disney Plus, because Sony still owns a couple of them, right?
Yes. Sony still, I think it's Muppets from Space might be one of the 2. There's a couple. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are a couple of movies that Disney does not own the rights to. When Disney purchased the intellectual property from the Henson Company, it was in bits and pieces. It wasn't everything. And as a result, it has been very difficult to create a library of Henson material because Disney didn't own all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that being said, Muppets in Space, not my favorite. It should be my favorite Muppet movie, and it's totally not.
I have never watched it because it's a film that explains the origins of Gonzo. And I maintain that Gonzo, very much like another person we'll be chatting about later in this episode, does not need his origin explained.
Fair enough.
That's
fair
more
enough.
Foreshadowing for the rest of the show.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, well, on to our next news item, which is really good news. And that is that AMC is not going into bankruptcy, at least for now.
Yep.
They suspect to be able to make it through this crunch of trying to get everybody vaccinated from COVID.
At least till the end of, or deep into 2021, as I think how they said it. Yeah, they raised something like more than $900 million in an effort to, you know, consolidate debt and cover that sort of stuff so that they would not have to go into bankruptcy. So nearly $1 billion, which is, that is good news. Hopefully that means that the theater chain will be able to wait it out as we're trying to get these vaccines rolled out and to get to a point where they can open up again. Some other things we'll be waiting for. We have a trio of stories that are all spinoff sequels or prequels that we thought we would cover. And also this will tie into our next segment. That's even more. I am shadowing so many fours.
Listen, you are really almost every story kind of falls into what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah.
That we've talked about.
One of those stories is that Warner Brothers is talking about developing a series for HBO Max set in the universe of Harry Potter. That's about all we know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's hugely profitable to this day, even though we haven't had a new Harry. Well, I guess all of the Fantastic Beasts movies are new Harry Potter movies, but yeah. I don't count them.
Neither do I. They're terrible. They're almost unwatchable.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, there aren't any writers or talent actually set yet. They're just exploring the idea.
Yeah. So we assume this would be something like a series maybe set at Hogwarts. We don't know. But that does seem like, you know, a pretty sure bet. It's the same reason why they decided to make Deathly Hallows 2 movies. It wasn't that they felt they couldn't tell the story in one movie. It was that they thought, this is literally the last book in the series. We will not be making another one after this. Let's milk it. Next, we have a story that Ariel says she's got opinions about.
I do. So The Witcher is getting a prequel, Blood Origins. We knew that. They've finally announced one of their cast members, who is
Jodie Turner Smith.
And she is playing a character, Ailey?
I would call it a proto-Witcher. Sort of like how in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy eventually meets the first Slayer. This is kind of like the character that sort of is a precursor to the Witcher type of occupation.
So I am really excited to see what Jodie Turner Smith does with the property. She has done other science fiction stories before. She was in George R. R. Martin's adaptation of Nightflyers, for instance. But I was really hoping for a second season of Witcher. As someone who hasn't played the games and was incredibly lost in the first season's storyline, I don't want to go to a prequel and get even more confused while I'm still trying to figure out the original storyline. I don't think it's going to help.
And our last one in this trio of spinoffs and prequels would be the prequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, a film that we had heard about. It was rumored to be in development for a while, and now we know that the writer and the director for the Paddington films, they're both attached to this. So apparently we're going to get a Willy Wonka origin story, which is somewhat challenging, as Tim Burton tried to do that in the last adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and it was terrible.
Yeah, you kind of have to go away from what the source material does tell us about Willy Wonka, Also, Willy Wonka's other stories that Roald Dahl tried to write also didn't do that well.
Yeah, like they never really... Well, one was The Glass Elevator, Charlie and the Glass mm-hmm. Elevator. And that one didn't really capture imaginations. And the third one, Charlie in the White House, I believe is what it was. That one only got one chapter in before Roald Dahl himself gave up on it. So it didn't even get finished.
Yeah. If you go back to like how Willy Wonka got the Oompa Loompas, that's not a good story to tell.
Yeah. So for me, like Wonka, like Gonzo, is a character who does not need their backstory explained.
Mm-hmm. That being said, having put on Paddington 2 out of a moment of boredom and nothing else being on television, and then watching the entire movie that I thought I was going to watch for 5 minutes because it was so awesome. If anybody can do it, it's that team.
Yeah. So we will have to keep an eye out. It's very possible that they'll make a good, just largely unnecessary movie. Now, that kind of leads us into what we're going to talk about in our next segment, where we're going to have a discussion about when is more too much? Like, when is it bad to get more of a good thing? But we will talk about that after we take this break. So we wanted to talk about this trend where we get more entries into a franchise, kind of similar to like Deathly Hallows getting split into two movies, or The Hobbit mm-hmm. being split into three movies.
Three.
Yeah, that kind of thing where some rights holder, whether it's a movie studio, television studio, or an author, it could be an author, has gotten into their heads that they need to produce more of something that was really popular because it's almost a license to print money. And often that ends up being an unsatisfying experience for fans. Mm-hmm. At best, it might be, that wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And at worst, it might be, you have ruined everything I loved and held dear. So, for example, one franchise that I think fits into this mold is Highlander. I think the first film is interesting. It has some stuff in it that I really love. I love the soundtrack. Queen did an amazing job. The concept is bonkers and I love it, but it's mm-hmm. the type of film that has a pretty definitive ending. And so when there was a decision to make more films in the franchise, they had to sort of retcon the ending of the first film for there to be any more sequels. Otherwise, it just mm-hmm. doesn't make sense. And it still doesn't make sense. And those sequels are, to varying degrees, terrible to the worst thing ever. There are no good Highlander sequels as far as I am concerned. And even the original Highlander movie, as much as I enjoy it, is far from a perfect film. Mm-hmm. But that's a great example of more not necessarily being better. There was always this hope that the next Highlander movie was somehow going to fix the previous Highlander movies. It just mm-hmm. never seemed to happen.
Yeah, you know, I feel that way about a lot of prequels, too. For instance, Maleficent.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need an origin story for the bad guy. I didn't need her to be a sympathetic character, even. I understand that people like it. And if that's your jam, more power to you. But to me, it just didn't add anything to the story mm-hmm. at all.
And again, it feels sort of like Disney cashing in on mm-hmm. Sleeping Beauty, because this is kind of related to Disney's habit of taking their animated films and making live action versions, because rather than try and come up with new IP, they're relying on the love and affection people have for the stuff that they've already done. So why don't we do that again, kind of thing?
Yeah.
Star Wars, I think, falls into this category too, at least for some people. For me, definitely. Like, both the prequels and the sequels fall into this category for me. The original trilogy is pretty good. Return mm-hmm. of the Jedi is probably the weakest of the three, but it's a pretty good trilogy. But the prequels and the sequels don't do much for me at all.
You know, I would agree. There were things I liked about the prequels. Listening to my friends who have children talk about introducing their kids to Star Wars, and even though there's some really dry political material in there,
yeah,
like, the kids like it. So, you know, for like, it was great to put that in place for people now who are introducing their kids to Star Wars.
Yes.
That being said, not my favorite trilogy of the bunch. This last trilogy, there were things that I liked about the movies. Honestly, Rian Johnson's was my favorite, even though there are certain things in his episode I'm also like, why did you give us Luke milking a walrus elephant creature? But
it's that blue milk, man. It's that blue milk. Once you have a taste.
It was green, but still, I digress though. Like, I feel like it suffered from the definitive decision to make each set of those a trilogy, as opposed to, ooh, I have a story that I think would be great in the Star Wars universe. Let me make that alone. So Rogue One, I think, was a fantastic story.
Oh, okay. Well, we disagree on that, but I won't use this time to go off on that. But I will say that I think a big part of this issue just stood from the fact that in the first Star Wars film, Obi-Wan makes a vague reference to the Clone Wars and to Luke's father. And that was enough to have people have their imaginations go wild about how that must have played out. Like, what are the Clone Wars? What does that mean? How did Obi-Wan serve Princess Leia's father during the Clone Wars? And everyone just came up with different theories about how that was going to play out. And once you get to that point, you're also in danger of the fact that you're never going to be able to create something that's going to measure up to someone's expectations or imagination. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
So that's a big issue too. See, to me, the sequels that I tend to like a lot are ones where it's the same characters, but it's not necessarily a continuation of the original story. So, for example, we know, speaking about Rian Johnson, we know about Knives Out is going to get a sequel. Mm-hmm. And you know that Knives Out sequel is going to be a new mystery with the detective. It's not going to be a continuation of the story from the first film. And yeah. I can't wait to see that.
Honestly, Thor Ragnarok kind of skirted around the continue. Like, we had Thor, which I really enjoyed the first Thor, and then we had the second Thor movie, which,
yeah, Dark Elves on Parade.
Look, it had Christopher Eccleston, so I had to like it a little bit, but it was not great. I will admit it was not great. And then they turned it around for the third, largely by just making it its own thing.
Yeah,
you know.
And that's another, like, that's another interesting challenge though, right? Because each of those movies in all of those different franchises are themselves part of an even bigger franchise, that of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So then you've got multiple people to satisfy. You have the fans of the actual hero, you have the fans of the overall cinematic universe. And trying to tell stories that continue not just the individual storyline, but then feed back into this bigger overarching storyline. I can't imagine how difficult it is to keep all those plates from falling off. You know, you have to keep them spinning. But I think there's this tendency to go toward prequels and sequels because of the idea that you've already got a built-in audience there. So therefore, you know, you're banking on a good box office from the get-go that is to the detriment of good storytelling. Like, we can get good stories from that. They do happen.
I'm hoping the new Ghostbusters movie is a good sequel.
I hope so. I'm not super optimistic, but I'm hoping.
Listen, I'm hoping. I didn't say I expected it to be. Usually I can do about one sequel before I feel like it's a cash grab in the same storyline, before they have to go to different storylines. That being said, you know, MCU, like you said, spinning plates does good at it. The third Thor was great. The third Iron Man was passable. I'm hoping the third Spider-Man is fantastic.
The third Captain America was good, but not as good as the second Captain America, which was way better than the first Captain America.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, first Captain America has the same problems that all the Marvel origin stories have. So, but that's a story. That's a conversation for a different time.
At least they're starting with the prequel, so it's the beginning of the story and right. not going back.
Yeah, we're not gonna get a movie filling in what happened in the interim years for Captain America, because he's just a block of ice. So it would be nothing happening. Maybe you see like a little like penguin walk by occasionally. That would be about it.
You know, I wouldn't watch that movie, but I would use it as a screensaver. Yeah,
it could be like the Captain America penguin webcam. You just have that up in a window.
If you're listening, MCU, I want this.
Well, you know, that sounds like a great mashup, but we have our own mashup to cover in just a second. And yes, both factors of the mashup have been part of our conversation in our news segment. So I hope you're ready to hear some monstrous fun stuff as we move right along into this next break. Hey, Ariel.
Hey, Jonathan.
Would you like to tell the good people about the terrible thing that you're going to make us do now?
Listen, you can't judge. You made us do Gotham Universe meets VeggieTale Universe last week, okay?
Yeah, that was pretty bad, and I'm not ashamed.
So this week, we are taking the Muppet Universe mm-hmm. and mixing it with the Godzilla Universe.
Yep.
I'm very excited about it.
Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
Why mess with tradition? I'll go first.
Okay.
So my mashup is a mashup of the original Muppet movie mixed with Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is the 1956 version, not the 2019 version, because I still haven't been able to catch that one all the way through.
I'm going to interrupt you already, Ariel, because I'm so excited. I have a feeling we have the same joke. Go for it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, go okay. for it. Go for it.
So this is called The Muppet Muto. Beloved comedian Steve Martin sits in a hospital, bandaged up, broken banjo, telling reporters of the chaos he witnessed firsthand and how he saved L.A. and the world from a fearsome felt uprising. You see, it started with the scientist, Dr. Hopper, who is evil mad on his quest to get the largest frog legs ever for his true passion, a French fried frog leg restaurant. All of his previous genetic engineering feats had failed him, and catching frogs is hard and tedious. So after weeks of scouring the Okefenokee Swamp, he was about to give up when he met Kermit the Frog singing in the swamp, which is weird. One, it's a felt frog. Two, he's singing. But he thinks, surely Kermit has frog friends, so he talks Kermit into bringing a bunch of his froggy friends to L.A. to start the Swamp and Friends show. The address he really gives Kermit is to his secret lab, his plan being to catch all the frogs that Kermit brings in the lab, expose them to radiation in a controlled environment, and blow them up to get giant frog legs. However, Kermit, being a Muppet, ends up not just bringing his swampy frog friends, but a bunch of other Muppets he meets along the way. In fact, he makes so many new friends that he sends all his froggy friends back home, thinking the Muppets will make a better team to entertain the world with. Also along the way, they meet Steve Martin, the comedian, yes, who is on a bluegrass tour, who thinks that they are absolutely darling and encourages them on the endeavor. He says, look me up once you get to L.A. So the Muppets, they get to L.A. and they send Steve Martin a note saying, we made it, come watch our audition at so-and-so address. And they enter the theater, which is really the lab to Dr. Hopper. Dr. Hopper only sees Kermit entering the building, missing all of the other Muppets, and he locks the doors and starts up the radiation mechanism, not realizing that all the other creatures who entered are not frogs. However, as that radiation starts upticking, one of Gonzo's rogue chickens bumps into the wrong button and the radiation goes off the charts. And the next thing you know, out of this collapsing building emerges Kermzilla breathing rainbow fires, Rolf Dan firing musical shockwaves, Gonzra, who is merged with his chickens, becoming winged and causing major wind gusts, Mecha Piggy, who pierces eardrums with her high-pitched whining roar, and Fozuki, who is ridiculous and finds mayhem the funniest joke of all. They start rampaging, fumbling all over LA, wreaking havoc, and Steve Martin, who is just heading out to watch their audition, sees it all. Martin knows that they think they are doing good for humanity and must still think so at their giant size. He also knows that music soothes a savage beast. And so he starts playing the Rainbow Connection on his banjo, luring Kermit and the other Muppets to the La Brea Tar Pits, the closest thing he can think of to match the swamps back at Kermit's home. His goal is to just stick the Muppets in the tar pits until he can figure out how to change them back to regular size. But giant felt soaks up tar really well, and the Muppets start sinking to the bottom of the pits. We flash back to Mr. Martin in his hospital room with all the reporters around him as a single tear rolls down his cheek and he finishes his story. The reporters leave, and all of a sudden, Martin hears in the distance the brief, otherworldly humming of Never Before, Never Again. Never Before, Never Again. Cut to black.
Wow, yours got grim. You killed all the Muppets.
They're gonna listen. You heard the ominous singing. They're gonna come back. Godzilla always comes back.
Well, I can now say that I thought you were gonna go the same direction I went in, and you did not. So I have got a different take. Mine is called The Muppets Take Godzilla, and our movie begins with a flashback. It's the climax of the original The Muppet movie, in which Doc Hopper, the restaurant mogul who wants Kermit as his spokesfrog for his chain of frog's legs restaurants, is closing in. Animal consumes some growth formula made by Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and grows to a massive size, scaring off all the bad guys and saving the day. We have a swimmy dissolve. We're now in the present day. An animal is back to his usual animal size. The Muppets are on a cargo ship, captained by Tom Hanks, and they are bound for Tokyo Bay. As Hanks pilots the ship, he hears that they are being pursued by pirates. How can the same thing happen to the same guy twice, he says. And someone says, is that Bruce Willis's line? The pirates close in and are ready to board, and that's when the Muppets see that the pirates are led by Tim Curry and the entire crew are from Muppet Treasure Island. Kermit helpfully explains to Mr. Curry that they're in the wrong movie. Curry, or Long John to his friends, apologizes. He is a gentleman of fortune after all, and the pirates sail off peacefully, singing. What a nice man, says Fozzie. Hanks maneuvers the ship toward Tokyo Bay, but chaos is breaking out on deck. Miss Piggy is practicing her Japanese, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem are playing Turning Japanese by the Vapors, and Lou Zealand is hurling his boomerang fish as he practices his idea for a super fresh sushi delivery service. One such fish whacks Tom Hanks in the head, and he veers off course. The ship carrying the Muppets accidentally nudges another ship carrying barrels labeled Super Nuclear Toxic Fish Food. A barrel falls off the ship and sinks into the ocean, which bubbles a lot. The Muppets disembark and start to debate what they should do first, with everyone seeming to have a different idea of what they should do. Kermit wants to head to the countryside and see the cherry blossoms. Piggy wants to check out the fashion district. Scooter really just wants to look at electronics stores. Fozzie wants to try out some new material. As they bicker, the sea behind them is roiling, and the spiky back of a certain enormous lizard monster rises up. Godzilla stands tall, his/her shadow covering the Muppets, as they continue to argue amongst themselves. Meanwhile, the people of Tokyo sort of roll their eyes and go indoors, shutting themselves in as if to say, well, here we go again. The traffic stops and the streets are emptied, but it's only when Godzilla lets out that monstrous scream that the Muppets all freeze and turn around in unison. After a beat of silence, all the Muppets go into full-on freakout mode. Godzilla starts to make his/her way to the shoreline, approaching Tokyo, which seems almost resigned to what's about to happen. Kermit sees that Godzilla is heading directly toward Tokyo Disney Sea, the theme park. Guys, Kermit yells, we gotta do something or the boss is gonna be awful mad. The Muppets all look and it's clear they are all processing how Mickey is gonna be miffed if Godzilla crushes that theme park. They spring into action. What follows is a series of attempts to distract Godzilla. Fozzie tries out his material, but Godzilla agrees with Statler and Waldorf that it's fishy. Honeydew and Beaker try to distract Godzilla with their own Mecha Muppet Godzilla. But while Godzilla first seems interested, A malfunctioning remote control in Beaker's hands leads to the robot's premature destruction, and so on. Until Animal, convinced he can take on Godzilla, issues out his own roar of a challenge. Godzilla seems either amused or confused and is just about to squish Animal when Beaker, zapped by that remote control, accidentally tosses the last remaining vial of the growth formula, forgotten in his own lab coat. It flies through the air and hits Animal directly, and then Animal grows to the size of Godzilla. What follows is essentially the trailer for Godzilla vs. Kong, complete with Animal doing an action movie jump away from an explosion. But in the middle of their struggle, Animal and Godzilla find out they aren't so different after all. And Kermit, teeny tiny Kermit, points this out with a lovely, earnest speech, which gets to Godzilla. And instead of fighting, they all become friends. We end the movie with a montage of the Muppets touring Japan, Godzilla in tow. We see them at Disneyland, in downtown Tokyo, touring the countryside, on top of Mount Fuji, and in the very end, we learn Godzilla has joined the Electric Mayhem as a backup singer and dancer. The end.
I would so watch that. I feel like I did in my head as you were saying it, but I would watch that on the big screen as well.
Yeah, the first thing that came to me was that scene in the Muppet movie where Animal grows to an enormous size. And that's why when you mentioned the Muppet movie, I thought, uh-oh, I have a feeling we're going to have the same story.
Oh, no. Really, I just wanted to pick a movie that I was familiar with, and that one was the first one.
Yeah.
Also, I picked Godzilla King of Monsters, the version that I did specifically because it starts with an injured American reporter named Steve Martin.
Nice. I like that we also had references to other stuff. I couldn't resist having the reference to Muppet Treasure Island, which I maintain is probably the best of the Muppet films that came out in that era.
Agree. I agree. In fact, I want to go and watch that right now. So I'm going to end this episode with you, Jonathan.
That sounds good, Ariel. If people would like to reach out and send us their thoughts, their own mashups, maybe suggestions for things we can talk about in future episodes, how would they do such a thing?
Well, they can email us at lncatiheartmedia.com, or they can reach out to us on social media. On Twitter, we are LNC_podcast, and on Facebook and Instagram, we're Large Neurodron Collider. You can also go to our website and leave us a note there. That's where we put all of our episodes and show notes.
Yep. And thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. Remember, if you enjoyed the show, leave us a review. Tell your friends about the show. Word of mouth helps a lot. We really enjoy doing this. We can't wait to hear from you guys. And until next time, she has been Ariel Kasten.
And he has been Jonathan Mecha Strickland.
The Large Neurodron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.